Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense. We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies. Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, infographics, relevant links, book suggestions, or just to leave comments. Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Hi, everybody. This is Brett. Today is October 9th. Welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. I am so excited to bring you today's show. This is the kind of episode I dream about. I'm going to be joined today by Nick Hazelton. He is 17 years old. He left school at the end of last year to pursue a very exciting entrepreneurial vision we are going to discuss in some detail on the show today. He has a podcast on the Liberty Radio Network. It's called The Anarcho-Yacatalist. I'll link to that in the show notes. He's been on this show before. I've been on his show before. And today's discussion for me really represents what the School Sucks Project is all about. But first, School Sucks Project is entirely listener and community supported. People like you make this show possible. If you're new, we put three important messages at the beginning of the show now. The first one is what I need you to do to help us out. The second one is a show of gratitude for somebody who is helping us out with a small, recurring, monthly donation. And the third message is just a 2 to 3 minute sample from the hundreds of hours of additional content that people will gain access to if they make that commitment to support us on a monthly basis. And for the 2 to 3% of you in the audience who already do this, thank you for your patience through this portion of the show. I am committed to making these messages as entertaining as possible. I promise. So let's get to that. And then it is time for my conversation with Nick Hazelton, this introduction to self-directed learning and living for teens. Are you a teen? I hope so. This show was made with you in mind.
1 penny, 2 penny, 3 pennies, 4 pennies, 5 pennies make a
nickel.
Hi, everyone. Do you like ads? Of course you don't. They're stupid. And even though School Sucks is a project that requires a lot of time and money, we're working hard to keep the show ad-free. You can help us by going to schoolsucksproject.com/AV and become a monthly subscriber. You'll get access to hundreds of hours of additional content, and it really, really helps the show. If enough people do it, it's like having sponsors.
Let's go faster!
Thank you.
1 penny, 2 pennies, 3 pennies, 4 pennies, 5 pennies make a
nickel.
6 pennies, 7 pennies, 8 pennies, 9 pennies, 10 pennies make a
dime.
2 dimes and a nickel make a
quarter.
New subscriber geography trivia. You just say a person's name and then tell a fact about where they live.
Today's new subscriber is Joe S. Joe just signed up this week. He lives in Lancaster. That's in the UK. And I'll tell you what, 550 years ago, things were getting pretty Game of Thronesy in those parts. Steve, can you cue up that music we talked about? Perfect. By the way, Steve is the new subscriber, geography trivia intern, works about 2 minutes a show. Steve, you're doing great so far. Thanks. Oh, anyway, I should also mention that the way I want to do this from now on is to alternate between older subscribers and people who just signed up. So if you join the AV Club, there's a very good chance you might hear some facts about your town in the very near future on new subscriber geography trivia. Thanks, Steve. So anyway, Joe is from Lancaster. We flash back to 1451. England has a king. His name is Henry VI. He is from the House of Lancaster. He struggles with bouts of insanity. In fact, a couple years later, in 1453, he becomes completely unresponsive to everything going on around him. Around this time, Parliament names Richard, the Duke of York, as Henry's successor because there was a lot of concern that Henry would completely, he was like in and out of sanity, but they were worried he was going to go completely insane before his wife, Margaret, birthed the son to become the heir to the throne. So Richard from the House of York's getting all excited about this crown that he might have. But then Margaret gives birth to a boy. Situation now becomes that Richard is declared by Parliament to be the protector of Henry and Margaret's child, the true heir, and he can rule as regent. Seems like a fair arrangement until 1455, when Henry VI regains his sanity and the first phase of the War of the Roses is underway. War of the Roses. Why is it called that? Both of the family crests had roses on them. Actually, they're different houses, and they're really in the same larger royal family. That's a story for a different time. Let's get to the battles. In St. Albans in 1455, an army led by Henry VI goes up against Richard the Duke of York. Richard wins. But then Margaret is like, fuck that. In 1459, she goes to France and comes back with a bunch of mercenaries to pound Richard's Yorkist armies. Richard flees to Ireland. The next decade in this conflict is very, very violent. Most of the House of Lancaster supporters get defeated. Henry VI, the king, is thrown into the Tower of London. Parliament doesn't know what to do. The English law stated that a new king couldn't get the crown until the old king had died. But we've got Henry VI, not dead, just sitting in jail. So Parliament once again names Richard the regent, and this pisses off Margaret. So she raises another army. And in 1460, at the Battle of Wakefield, God, you know, every place outside of Boston, Massachusetts is named after one of the places where the battles and the War of the Roses took place. That's interesting. Battle of Wakefield, 1460, Henry and Margaret beat the House of York. Richard, the guy they started the fight with, dies in the battle, and he is succeeded by his son, Edward. So now it's Edward IV of York going up against Henry VI of Lancaster, and they're back to do it again in St. Albans in 1461, 6 years after this whole thing started. Things are looking very good for Henry VI until a snowstorm. Ho-ho! Winter is coming, bitch! Edward turns around and slaughters the entire House of Lancaster army. So now the throne is his by right of conquest, and Edward IV is recognized as the King of England. And he rules peacefully for the next decade. But suddenly, Henry VI is sane again, and he's like, get off my throne! But even after a small victory in 1471 at the Battle of Barnet, Henry can't maintain. Edward regroups and crushes the House of Lancaster army in the Battle of Tewkesbury, also a place in Massachusetts. In this battle, Margaret is captured and her young son is killed, and the House of York would rule England for the next 14 years. The general consensus was that Edward IV was a good ruler, and he left the throne to his son, Edward V, who was in the care of his uncle, Richard of Gloucester, also a place in Massachusetts. The end. Just kidding. Edward V and his brother mysteriously disappear, and suddenly Uncle Richard, who's supposed to be taking care of them, proclaims himself Richard III, King of England. A little suspicious. People of England don't trust Richard III. They're thinking they might want to do something about it. But who will help them? How about our old friends, the Lancasters, who at this point unite with the Tudor family, led by Henry Tudor, who goes head-to-head with crazy Uncle Richard III at the Battle of Bosworth in 1485. 30 years! After this whole thing started, Henry Tudor and his supporters from the House of Lancaster defeat the House of York, and Uncle Richard III is killed. Henry Tudor is crowned the King of England as Henry VII, and the new Tudor dynasty takes over England, marking an important first step on their path to get a successful series on Showtime. The end. Ah. The night is dark and filled with terrors.
New subscriber, geography, trivia.
And finally, today's bonus content sample clip comes from July 14th. It is called Podcastmasters Preparatory Academy. Those are our prep sessions. Should we cover the 2016 election? In this show, Osborne Gardner and I discuss the ifs, whens, whys, and hows of covering the 2016 presidential election. In the end, we decide it's a good idea and that we should be as sensationalist as possible. Here are two short excerpts, and then we'll get started. Thanks for your patience, everyone. Sorry about all these ads. Gotta do ads.
So I keep getting asked to have candidate events at my house. That would be a perfect situation where we just gather up our own people and just...
Or how about this? You have them come and everything looks normal, you know, everything checks out. And then you bring them down into the basement to the men's lounge. And I'm just...
petting a cat.
Yeah, we've been waiting for you.
Have a seat.
Have a seat. Don't be nervous. Don't be nervous. Everything will be fine.
That's right. You just sit in the chair.
No, Berwick should do it. Yeah. It's just Berwick in a white suit with a cat and like two Mexican gangsters behind him.
Turn the lights on.
We hear you're interested in running for the president of the United States. Wow. And we're just like the audience of this man. How like there's just always people hanging just around the king
never
or the queen.
Anything.
Right. They're just sitting there
faceless,
quietly.
Shadowy.
Yes. Yeah, we're in the shadows.
We have clipboards.
Right.
You know.
How ambitious of you, seeking such a high office.
Should we endorse a candidate at the end of this process?
Endorsement of a candidate for office of the state.
Or could we find another way to do the endorsement? Yeah. Like,
amongst the criminals, he's the least of the criminals.
Yeah. So suppose we did something like we created like a Hitler index, right? And assigned it to each category or to each candidate. Like, hey, you're 90% Hitler, and you're only 10%.
I love it.
And then, but then when we come up with our endorsement, then we can like go to one of their public events and like put out a
we've
plaque.
We've endorsed you.
It's like we've endorsed you with you. Your Hitler score is only 15%.
Is it too? is it too complicated if we had like you know a fascist for the Republicans and socialist for the.
Yeah,
Democrats.
You're 10% Trotsky or something. You're
worse. We can do worse than Trotsky.
Yeah, true.
I don't think he killed anybody.
Stalin.
Yeah. Hitler and Stalin. Those are the two go-tos, right? So we have a Hitler index and a Stalin index.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Well, dude. All right. So, but Hitler is kind of a socialist too, though. So
yeah, true.
Mussolini? Let's skip. Well,
they're all statists, so it just depends on what. Like you're trying to find that shading of the statism.
To
fit the left wing and the right wing.
So I think Mussolini and Stalin would be the best choices. Like it's risky to not do Hitler.
I'd like to let you know that I dropped nihilism. I've officially stated that I don't like it anymore.
Yay! That's great news. I hope I was somewhat helpful in that process, but I know you're certainly on your own journey and you're certainly capable, but I hope I just gave you a little push in the right direction. Cool.
Yeah, and I think I will I think you do deserve some credit there.
Awesome.
But what I wanted to have you on to talk about today is my self-education plan. You're somebody who talks about self-directed education a lot, so I respect your views. You're the one I got the idea from, I believe,
awesome.
That I could actually do this when I called into Free Talk Live with you and Ian.
Yep.
That's where I was like, okay, I can drop out of school. Let's do this. So I really appreciate that, and I wanted to have you on to talk about it. But I think we need to go over some terms and talk about what self-directed education really is.
Sure, yeah, I'm happy to do that. Where do you want to start? Because I always like to try and make that distinction between education and schooling.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think that the difference between schooling and education is?
I'm always looking for new ways to describe this. And I recently put an infographic up on the website and on the School Sucks Facebook page talking about basically what we oppose at the School Sucks Project and what we promote. And, you know, there's one side of the graphic is institutionalized schooling formed out of a desire of a very small group of people to scientifically manage an expanding and diversifying American population. So while there are some basic skills transmitted through that process, it really is more about indoctrination. And you add to that troubling history, a century at this point of political corruption. And, you know, today we see things like the medication and overdiagnosis of children, zero tolerance policies, which are basically excuses for teachers and administrators to not really think about discipline or corrective action. They just have this prescriptive, this is the punishment that fits that action. And, you know, I mean, there's other things we talked about on the show as well, like Common Core, standardized testing, all things that take away from a self-directed educational experience, because the milieu of school and the routine of school, I think, really distances people from what is almost always a natural love of learning. We love finding out new things and making them useful in our lives. You know, and if you just think about not having knowledge versus having knowledge, think about it in emotional terms. How fun is it to know somebody is keeping a secret from you, right? That's information that you can't have. We want information. And, you know, what we promote, the answer to that is learner-driven education, the confidence to go out and seek that information for yourself. And it's built on natural gifts that I think people have. Motivation, I just basically talked about. Creativity, curiosity, individuality. And, you know, through the School Sucks Project, we're trying to deliver information that can be made useful in life. So we've talked a lot on the show about productivity and organization, developing a greater sense and aptitude really for self-reliance. We did a series on agorism, which is basically how to survive in the counter economy. And I'm hoping to revisit that because we could go into much more detail. A variety of emotional topics like psychology and the six pillars of self-esteem, critical thinking, in terms of the trivium or identifying logical fallacies in political rhetoric or in the mainstream media generally. And one of my favorite things to do on the show is explorations of history, because I think this was like the great robbery in public school. I had no idea how fascinating history was because of the way it was taught. So anytime I can do an in-depth exploration of a historical subject, it takes time, it takes research, it takes preparation, it takes a lot of production. I like to do that because it was such a valuable lesson for me. Like, hey, this is actually interesting, you know, if it's not presented in this bland, compulsory manner. So that's an introduction to the distinction. I'm always looking for new ways to describe this. So could I just share a short excerpt from an article I found recently on Wired
Kind
of makes this distinction, because it's called Rethinking Education, Self-Directed Learning Fits the Digital Age. So I thought this was relevant to our conversation. And is there an author? Yeah, Amy Harrington. And I will throw this on my Twitter and on our School Sucks group. Taking apart the idea of schooling as we know it and getting back to the roots of children and learning is a pervasive thought which I am constantly researching and evaluating. There is no shortage of pedagogies out there, but there seems to be a lack of application of relevant methodologies for out-of-the-box creative thinkers. Our public educational system, as we know it, is one of the most broken institutions, which is entirely counterintuitive to its intended purpose. Many parents have children and without thought register their children at the local school because currently that is the expected norm. Historically, compulsory schooling at an institution was not the norm, and I am suggesting we rethink everything we currently know about traditional brick-and-mortar schools. Even for those who can get through the top-down, rote-style didactic learning and achieve high marks in a subject, it doesn't mean that this passive recipient style of providing information is even close to optimal. Teaching to the test creates an atmosphere of outcome-based performance within a high-stakes, anxiety-producing context that is the antithesis of meaningful learning, and it is destroying our youth. If we are to prepare our children for the ever-evolving, unknown future, then antiquated, subpar methods of information dissemination will need to change. Standards-based education is ruining the way educators teach and children learn. Education should not be about teaching to the next level in education and vocation, and yet, that is exactly what our current school system is designed to do. Our goal should be to foster a love of learning for learning's sake. Learning is not something that we should force onto our children to ensure that they go to college and get a good job. True learning is intrinsically motivated, and the reward is knowledge. And I think I added that because it's so relevant to the time in which we live. So being adaptable to the this time, and this flow of information is really, really important. And I think self-directed learning is obviously far superior to institutionalized schooling, even college at this point.
Yeah, I totally agree. You used the phrase learner-driven education, right? Or
yep.
Learner-directed education. Do you think that's a better term than self-directed education, or is it the same thing?
I think it's self-directed learning, learner-driven. They're pretty synonymous as far as I'm concerned. I'm starting to like self-directed more and more. I think it's more powerful and certainly more descriptive than terms that I've used kind of carelessly on the show in the past, like unschooling, because that can mean a lot of things. Like, obviously, I'm pro that idea, but I want to talk more specifically about what unschooling includes. And you know, I mean, learning is something that there has been a lot of research put into. So to just say, oh, yeah, you know, set your kids free, it kind of neglects a lot of investigation that we should do either as people who want to mentor children or parents of children or self-directed learners ourselves, like just setting myself free. Well, you know, traditionally, I've had some bad habits. I'm kind of lazy. I went to school for 12 years, right? So I wasn't set up to succeed really on my own. So, I think there's a lot more to it that needs to be unpacked than just saying, yes, let's unschool. Let's set the children free. At the very least, before the children are set free, I think who's ever really invested in doing that needs to just have some foundation, like what are the questions we should be asking ourselves? How should we be monitoring this? An understanding of learning styles would be really helpful. And I guess also some awareness of the skills that should be developing. And I really feel like there's a set of traits that need to be there from the start. So there's a lot to think about before we just say, yes, unschool over compulsory schooling. I mean, obviously, get your kids out of school and they're better off, for sure. But if you really want them to be above and beyond successful what they would have been in the compulsory schooling process, there's a lot to examine there.
Okay. So, my next question was going to be, do you think that self-directed education is for everybody? Can anybody do it? Or, like you said, does there have to be some sort of drive to do it? There has to be certain personality traits to be able to?
Well, I think it's obviously for a lot of people, a lot of young people who are in public school right now. And I think that there's a lot of traits that were there originally that I believe are there kind of naturally, that school takes from being more intrinsic to extrinsic. So like just some examples of that would be a fair degree of self-confidence. I think kids, when they're very young, from my observation, they really believe in themselves. And that's traded through the schooling process for approval addiction. You're basically just trying to please others, and that gives you your sense of self, like a counterfeit self-esteem. So self-confidence, I think, is a really important personality trait. But then being inner-directed, like doing things for yourself, for your own satisfaction, is really important. And intrinsically achievement motivated. So if a person has those traits, I think he or she is a great candidate for this. What's frustrating is that school is hurting these often natural personality traits. And that's something that often needs to be repaired. I mean, I know your dad is basically a principal, or is he called the headmaster where you went to school?
He's called an administrator.
The administrator, right. But he's been supportive, and, the school that you went to wasn't like your run-of-the-mill public school. So you had advantages, but a lot of people who might be your age and trying this for the first time, I think there would be a period of repair and decompression that would very much be needed. Also, you've had great advantages of exposure to all kinds of media basically encouraging you to do these things. So I think some people start out behind where you started, and just this question of how can you get the footing you need to start out on this this venture, that would be a very important question.
Yeah, I started out with some of those thoughts in mind. I am achievement driven. I am very self driven, and I've always have been, I think. And I wouldn't say that the Kings Valley School was that harmful to that. It was certainly an obstacle for self education, but it certainly fostered that to a degree, I think. And my dad, as a fan of School Socks, and somebody who listens to me when I criticize the education system or the schooling system, he listens and he hears that, and he's right on board with self-directed education if you can do it. And he's definitely skeptical that most people can.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first started out this summer, I wasn't doing the stuff that I thought I should have been doing. When I was June and May, when I was thinking, okay, I'm going to drop out. I made my self-education plan. This is what I'm going to do. I have not been doing that until this month. And I'm not even doing some of the stuff that I said I was going to be doing. It proved a little bit harder than I thought it would be. And I definitely did have a decompression time where I was like, oh man, I'm out of school. I don't have to do anything. And luckily it was summer, so, you know, I had a little bit more, I had more distractions because people were free. I had friends. I wanted to hang out all the time, you know, and so I had some excuses not to do it. But then school came around. It's like, okay, now I got to start. And it's been a little bit rough. I'm still getting I'm doing the things that were most important to me in the self-education plan. I'm reading. I'm listening to a lot of shows. I'm doing stuff outside on the farm. So that's good. But definitely, I agree that it's hard to get started.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, the process of preparation. And, you know, I think there's some questions that are worth answering for anybody who wants to do this. I can run through a few of them if you want.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you kind of find yourself in that place where, yeah, suddenly you're on your own and you're in charge, there's definitely a list of things that need to be sorted out. You've probably spent some time considering the first one that I would bring up, which is essentially what are your strengths and how can you use them effectively towards, you know, fulfillment in your life. Another one would be identifying a field of interest, which I've assumed you like at least, and this kind of works towards setting goals, which is, I'm going to mention it, but it's something that I'm working on improving in my own life as well, even, you know, being 20 years older than you, at least being able to set goals for myself within a certain field of interest is really important. And then once you have some goals, laying out plans to essentially get those jobs done. There's other challenges too, because all of this, you've kind of been through school and guided through this process. There's this place, and I know you've dealt with it a little bit, where there's this chorus of voices telling you what you should do. Can you identify with that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So basically, there's this important emotional exercise, I think, of finding your own voice among all of those other voices in that chorus and listening to that voice. Because at this point in our lives, and this was happening to me like well into my 20s, there's going to be a lot of self-doubt. Let me change that. It might have been happening with me into my 30s. It might happen still once in a while, right? This sense of self-doubt, because the loudest voices are always the ones telling you you shouldn't or you can't or what are you thinking or where do you get the nerve? And even though there might be a lot of voices of encouragement, I didn't really feel like I was set up to listen to those voices for one reason or another. I think that's a deeper subject. But paying attention to your own voice, like, this is what I want to do, this is why, this is how I'm going to do it. I think if you have clarity in those areas, it makes it much easier to address and cope with the challenges or the problems that are going to come up along the way, to stay energized, to stay motivated, and to basically continue to cultivate an attitude of success. You know, like, I get really frustrated sometimes, but I don't ever think or worry about being a failure at what I'm trying to do. And even though sometimes the critical voices, even the ones in my own head, are the loudest, I still am moving forward down a path that I generally know where it's going. And I feel like even though I've had to get off the path that I thought was the right path and veer onto another one that still moves in the same general direction, like several times in the last 10, 12 years of my career, still moving in the same direction. So I think that having that attitude that you're going somewhere, you have a good idea of where it is really important. So all of those things I just mentioned kind of work together. And sometimes it's frustrating, like you feel like you're going in circles, you feel like you're sinking in quicksand. So in the last couple of years, especially as the show is concerned, I've tried to add more practical things like how to organize your time, how to kind of leverage and organize resources, how to best communicate and work with other people, like all of those things that are helpful along the way, I think are really, really important as well. But I mean, anybody can replay what I've just said in the last 5 minutes and kind of make it into a bulleted list. But those are all considerations when you're in that kind of decompression and repair process that I think are really important.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. And a big emphasis that I put on trying to do this is time management. That's been my most difficult thing to overcome. You know, I'm overly confident. I'm 17. But still, you know, sometimes I think, oh man, can I do it? That was mostly when I was trying to do it. And now that I've gotten started and I've been thrown into the thing, I have to do it. So whether or not I think I can, I'm going to try. That's kind of my outlook on it.
Sure. Yeah.
But the thing that's been most difficult was figuring out what I need to do and when, and trying to overcome the distractions that I have, right? You know, I have the internet and I'm home alone. You know, there's nobody here to tell me what to do. It's purely me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's very different not having somebody managing your time for you. And luckily, I've adapted to that fast. I have my planner. I have multiple people, you know, hounding me to use it. Like my grandfather, he's the one who gave it to me. He came over one time, and he's every once in a while he spends a couple days with us. And he sat me down. He's like, "This is how you're going to use your planner." And at first, I'm like, "Let me do it on my own, Grandpa." But you know, I'm polite to him, and I realized, okay, he has a point. He's been doing this for a while. I will listen to him, and it really helped. It really did. But at the same time, a lot of the motivation behind it comes from yourself, and that is something difficult to really work with.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of skills that help build that, right? Because I think this goes back to like the just setting the children free and letting them explore. Like at a certain age, such a valuable thing to do, especially when the alternative is having like a 6 or 7 year old student stuck in a desk being told what to do all day with very, very little freedom of movement outside of recess, I guess. But really moving forward and growing comes from having the confidence to do so. And having the confidence to do so comes from having a certain set of knowledge and skills to keep moving forward, basically. And those are things that have to be built. So if I was talking to an unschooling parent and they said, "Look at what Gregory did today. It's so amazing. He made all these puppets out of different pieces of fruit, and then he wrote a script and put on a puppet show and put it on YouTube with all of his fruit puppets." I would say, "That's amazing. How old is Gregory? 5? If she said, "Yes, that's fantastic. What a wonderful success story." But if I said, "How old is Gregory?" and she said 15, I would say, "Well, let's kind of maybe get Gregory moving forward," even though I'm going to use a very schoolish term right here, "towards some age-appropriate skills that are moving him towards some kind of self-actualization in life." So when I was a teacher, you know, we would focus basically on the development. And a lot of this was just talk, right? Because a lot of my teaching experience was just basically managing an environment and the people who are in it. But it didn't mean that we still didn't have, you know, lofty language that we would use for the education we were allegedly trying to deliver. So we would talk about things like information processing skills, a variety of executive functioning skills, which is basically, your mention of organization is what brought up this line of thinking. I think organization fits into organization and motivation basically fit into executive functioning skills, and you know, then other cognitive skills as well. That just having these skills builds the self-assurance that allows a person to keep moving forward towards their goals. I can't tell you how many times I've just like stopped because, or just tabled a project or stuck it in a filing cabinet because I was like, "That's too hard. That's too much to learn. The learning curve is too high. I can't do that right now because I'm going to get sucked into step-by-step examination of how to do every single one of these things." What that probably meant is that the outcome or the goal wasn't compelling enough to push me forward, because I feel like I overcame a lot of pretty significant challenges and kind of blind spots as far as knowledge was concerned to make something happen if I really wanted it to happen. So part of the self-learning process, I think, is, or self-directed education process, is really having some understanding of what are the key cognitive skills, what are the executive functioning skills that you want to have in place, what is your natural ability with those things, how can it be improved. And also, you know, information processing skills, which just basic things like listening, reading ability, observation skills, and, you know, some of the other cognitive skills would be generally that I would group like problem solving into that. Memory is a really important one, ways of improving memory, being able to abstract or elaborate or simplify, and then executive functioning skills. are basically things like strategizing, how do you gather information, your self-awareness about your knowledge set on a specific topic. Like, we see a lot of people who talk like they know everything about something, and the reason why they're able to talk that way is because they actually don't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. You know, so that kind of awareness is really important. I would add self-monitoring to that, and also a kind of a flexibility to, you know, assimilate new information as it comes up, to disregard old information if it contradicts something that has more of a factual basis, right? That's another place where we see a lot of schooled people getting really stuck. In the recent episode of Conspirathon, while most people, when you're introducing new ideas to them, it would be ideal if, at least in receiving new information, it could be more like this mind like water. They just absorb it. They say, that's interesting. I will ponder that. I will consider that as a reality if you can explain the process that led to that conclusion. But a lot of people, especially with more controversial topics like political or religious or cultural, it's like a devastating collision between two things that are not supposed to hit each other as that idea enters into their mind. So I attribute a lot of that to a lack of real learning skills because they never really were in a place that tries to develop them in a meaningful way.
Yeah, I think that I have an advantage in that because I do work on a lot of those things, especially self-awareness, because of my study for philosophy. I have the drive to, I want to know more. Mm-hmm. And the biggest obstacle to know more, I think, is to know yourself. Mm. And so that's something that I heavily focus on, and I don't see anybody really doing that. I mean, I actually know more than most people. I know more people than most people that do try to work on themselves actively, you know, because I have these media outlets like School Sucks, and I know a lot of intelligent people you've had on, and I've gotten to talk to them, right? So I have a lot of these people that have a lot of influences, but I don't think a lot of people do. I have multiple friends who I think are, you know, very smart, and they are very intelligent, but they don't have the drive to keep following that. And they have some other barriers that they're just not looking at into learning more. And it's disappointing, but I do think it's because they don't have the same self-reflection patterns that I and a lot of other people do who work on these things that I at least find important, like the Trivium. I've just started getting into that. And then also, like, this, I'm using most of the stuff that you do. That's usually where I get a lot of the ideas for a lot of these reflections, like the adverse childhood experiences studies. Right? Nobody really knows what that is. I first heard about it from you. So I don't think that people really look into those sort of things.
So do you think it's more a lack of, when it comes to these deficits that you're describing, especially as far as investigation or self-reflection, do you think it's a lack of capability or more a lack of exposure on the part of these other people?
I wonder that. I think it's sometimes it's both, and for different people. Like I know I brought this up to a friend who has experienced some pretty horrific things, and he's young, so I can't, you know, really blame him for not wanting to. Like, and even Derek J said once on your show that he doesn't like listen to your show because it makes him think too hard, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the adverse childhood experiences, that's hard to think about. If you face serious trauma, that's hard to think through, and maybe somebody does not have the capability to do that. I would like to think that everybody does, but I'm not convinced. But I do think most people could if they tried, and I do think that it's mostly a lack of exposure.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned Derek J, and from my experience, that's like his situation is kind of par for the course for, let's say, a good-looking guy or gal in their mid-20s with an active social life. You know, and lots of positive reinforcement for just being kind of socially adept or attractive. It's like, yeah, there. Why would I torture myself with some deep investigation of my childhood? And he and I have talked about that in more detail off the air. And, you know, I can say that about him because when I was in a very similar place with, you know, a few notable distinctions like sexual orientation and location, when I was his age. Yeah, I mean, I could totally identify with that. Why would I want to be in this process of self-discovery if I didn't need to be. And I even knew that I had a few pretty significant challenges that I needed to address, but I was young. Yeah, I was happy enough in certain ways that stopped me from looking at certain things more deeply. And yeah, I said, oh, I've got plenty of life ahead of me. There's always time for those investigations if need be. So maybe you found yourself, you know, 10 years younger than him, 20 years younger than me, with more time on your hands, with more isolation, and you've just and the exposure to other people who are talking about that stuff in a meaningful way. So you've just kind of been given this opportunity much earlier than a lot of people get it, which I think is great. But there's a lot of opportunity in either adversity or just, like I said before, the exposure to it, the awareness that it exists, that it's something that needs to be looked at when it's convenient to do so.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I haven't really talked about this on the show. I have a show that I'm writing a script for that will bring this up, but I had a lot of issues with depression in the last few years, and that was really where I got my start with looking at self at myself, because I was like, I don't want to feel this way. I was really in a state where I was not happy, and a lot of it had to do with the stress I was dealing with in school, because I was going to a very difficult school. I was trying to get all A's, right? And it was frustrating. And I was like, well, this isn't making me happy. What's going to make me happy? That's where I got my start, I think. And then I was lucky enough to have the exposure to people actually talking about this, and a community where I was encouraged to do more than just excel in school, right?
Yeah. And I would, you know, that was why I asked you that question too about, is it the capability to examine these things, or is it the exposure? Because just from all the experience that I had working with people your age, mostly doing things like SAT tutoring, it was always like, yeah, well, you know, done with high school, so I'm going to go to college so I can have this job and learn about the world through this cable news network. I never got the sense from most of those kids that it was due to a lack of capability. They were just living in these bubbles that school and society and family had created for them. So when I found something like the Joe Rogan podcast, which is obviously not super philosophically consistent or a solid 3-hour collection of facts on a certain issue every time it's released. Like, it contains a ton of good information, but I was like really excited. I was like, I know who Joe Rogan is. He was on news radio. He was the host of Fear Factor and The Man Show. He's like a celebrity, and he's doing this podcast with all of these like out of the mainstream explorations of politics and culture and science. And this would be really great. This would be a terrific thing for kids to find. And I was like, oh, well, wait a minute. That's why I started my show, because that's what I wanted it to be. So I wish I had gotten like a couple of television shows under my belt first, because we'd probably be way ahead of where we are now if I had done that. But, you know, I was really enthusiastic about finding out that Joe Rogan did a podcast and that he was talking about these things on the show, because I said, all right, well, he already kind of has this wedge into pop culture, right? So it just starting to have conversation. And I've done this with people, just like, hey, you know who Joe Rogan is? Like, yeah, I know who Joe Rogan is. Well, you should check out his podcast. You know, it's easier than saying something like, hey, do you know who Stefan Molyneux is? And they'd say, no. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, well, he's a guy I know who he is. You know, like, but at least when you have a name to push. So stuff like that is really encouraging. And I hope more opportunity. I can't think of like what a something to compare to Joe Rogan would be. But I think that's very cool that he's out there doing what he's doing, and he's attracting a mainstream following to an alternative method of examining the world around us. So what I'm looking to do through what I do is expose more people to this stuff as soon as possible, you know, and then they can decide when they want to address it or pursue it or deal with things that need to be dealt with. But I at least want the ideas to be like visible and easily accessible.
Yeah, I think you've done a brilliant job at that. And I've passed on your shows to many people. My grandfather and my father are huge fans of School Sucks, and I turned them on to that. And
nice.
Yeah, we've actually had conversations about the adverse childhood experiences and trauma being passed down through our family. And that was really enlightening. And it was fantastic to have that conversation. And it was super interesting. You know, like, you don't realize it, right? When you're not thinking about it, right? That, yeah, my great grandfather was an alcoholic, and maybe that had something to do with how my grandfathers were raised, you know?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And yeah, it's interesting, and I don't want to really get into that, but I feel like I'm giving too much detail in my explanation.
I can absolutely like what you're saying completely. I can identify with that totally, just in looking at my own family history, and I've had similar conversations with both my parents. So yeah, I get that.
Yeah, so it's interesting, and my main point is that, yeah, I think you're doing a great job with that, and I appreciate everybody else who's doing that. I love Carlos Morales' show, and he's brought up some stuff with PTSD. It's just interesting stuff, and it's out there. And, you know, usually people do come to a point where they're ready to examine that, I think, if they do have the right exposure.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It took me a long time to really jump into it. After, you know, having some insights from a very young age that there was things I need to look at, it always seemed like there would be time in the future to do it. And I would make some motions towards self-examination. Like, I think I started when I was 20 or 21 years old. But as far as like producing results that changed my life, it took a long time. So, you know, patience with self and patience with others, I think is really important. And recognizing where people are in their lives is also really important. I mean, I'm part of this thing called the Free State Project that just attracts anybody who's like liberty-minded to it, right? Some of those people are 21, some of those people are 67, and then we're all kind of like put into a place and together, you know, and interacting with each other. It's just something worth considering. Like, yeah, patience is really important. And it's easy for me because I know how long it took me to put myself on the best track for me.
Yeah, totally. And that, yeah, that's something that I think is important. Patience and empathy with people, because you can't force down stuff, or you can't force stuff down people's throats, right?
Right.
So I think we've come to a good point where we've examined those first few questions. And I don't know, how much time do you have left?
Oh, let's just keep going. Let's get this in today.
So I wanted to go over the self-education plan. I think we covered pretty well what is self-education, what is schooling, what is education versus everything else, and can anybody do self-education? And we even covered, I think, why don't people do a lot of self-education? It's because of the lack of exposure to practical and helpful information, and as well as being kind of held back by the system, and especially in schooling. And I think there are other societal pressures, too, that keep you from really pursuing your own drive to educate yourself.
Right, yeah.
And I think we covered that pretty well. Do you have anything else you want to add to that?
No, I'm actually looking forward to seeing what you've come up with as far as a plan for yourself. I think this is very cool.
Yeah, and I've unfortunately not looked at this in a couple months, so I'm ready to go over it myself and see if I want to change something. I already know a couple of things as I looked through it just a little bit during and before the show that I want to change.
Sure.
And so I'll explain this a little bit. The way I have it set up is that this was required by my parents for me to do this so that I could leave school. And I was resistant and reluctant in doing it, but I found that it actually has helped in showing, especially goals, right? I laid out the stuff that I want to do, and that was really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would even say I think that's a worthwhile expectation for parents when trying to guide somebody your age who has probably all kinds of outside of education distractions, being 16, 17, 18 years old, and accepting the fact that you're leaving school, but certainly not done with your education, because we never are. And also that this is a very sort of out of the mainstream approach that you're taking. So the fact that they would want some clarity as to, you know, what you're going to be doing and why, I think is perfectly reasonable. And other people who are listening who might want to be in your situation should consider putting together something like what we're looking at right now and what we're about to talk about. I think this is great.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree. So what I laid out first is, you know, what is the main thing I'm going to do? So I laid that out as my statement. This is what I plan to do outside of school. I will list all the responsibilities, goals, and actions I plan to have and take to become a self-educated and independent entrepreneur. All right. So I did that in this document. And that's what I started out with, is I was I'd like to change the statement a little bit right here, but I'd like to hear what you think of that first.
No, I think it's I think it's definitely a good start that you've kind of articulated a vision for yourself, right? To be self-educated, to be an independent entrepreneur. And you've backed that up with what we're going to talk about next, which is a series of goals that you want to achieve, right? That are all kind of supporting, or totally supporting, not kind of supporting, this vision that you basically created for yourself.
Sure. And so the thing that I want to change, or I guess add to it, is that I don't think that I want to be self-educated and independent and an entrepreneur just in and of itself. But I'm pursuing this because I think this is what's going to make me happy. And that's going to be my main goal. And I think that since we're spelling these out for a reason, so that I have a thing that I can come back to if I lose track of what my goal is, that I can come back and think, okay, this is what I was thinking. Do I still agree with this? And of course I do now, but I'd also like to add to this statement. I don't know exactly how I'm going to phrase it, but I'm going to write down on this. Is that I want to do this so because I think this will make me live a better life than, you know, what I'm doing now, which I don't think I'm not independent, and I don't like that because mm-hmm. I'm living under the roof of my parents, and unfortunately I'm very dependent on them, and I don't like it. So that's kind of my drive to be independent and self-educated. It's the same thing. I want to be independent, but in order, I think this is how you live a good life, is being able to take care of yourself as well as the people around you. So that's kind of my goal.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Perfect. Oh, wow. Now I see why people like Google Docs. I can see you typing.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Wow. That's very real time.
Yeah. So yeah, and then moving on, I listed out my goals. This is what I think will make me independent and self-educated. And my main goal here is that I want to be financially independent by 25. I want to be able to take care of myself by the time I'm 25. And I think that this is a pretty ambitious goal, actually. I think that a lot of people rely on their family because they're going to school, right, when they're 24. And they don't really have time to have a job. And when they do have a job, it's not a great job. So they can't entirely take care of themselves. I think plenty of people do it and do it well. But I think this is something that not many people will do.
It's a can as far as the age of financial independence that is certainly getting kicked further and further down the road, especially since now a lot of high school college graduates are returning home to live with their parents at, you know, 23, 24 years old. It just reminds me, I was reading that. I remember, I think I was 24. I was a year out of college and I had my first major related job related to my communications degree because I thought I needed to work in my field. So I quit the school I was working at. This lasted like 6 or 7 months in 2001. And I was making $300 a week as the assistant marketing director at a ski resort. And it was really like the opposite of the Dwight Schrute thing. I was the assistant to the marketing director. And, you know, really struggling, thinking that I was going to make a lot of money with my degree outside of college. And I had my first apartment in Western Massachusetts. And I remember I was 24 years old. And my dad and I were on the phone and I was trying to get him to write me a check for $700 for expenses. and he said, "This is the last check I'm writing you." And it was. my life. And you know, I've gotten, like, after I was 24, I got a little help from my mom on a variety of things. She was always very eager to help me where she could. So, but yeah, that was like financially independent by 25. I remember thinking, like, that was so late and feeling like I should have been, you know, financially independent day one out of college. So I'm telling you this story because I think you're giving yourself a huge head start here by skipping that tremendous opportunity cost, especially if there's no need for you to go to college. So yeah, I like that goal.
Yeah, and I'm comfortable with moving it back if I need to, honestly. So I just picked a random number. I thought, wow, 25 is good enough. Mm-hmm. I'm still beating most of my peers, so hey, we'll probably be fine with that.
And if financially independent, you know, doesn't include debt or mountains of debt, like student loans are huge. I mean, I understand you're running a business and obviously debt, true, you know, accumulating some debt is a part of that. But not having $150,000 in debt that you probably didn't need. That's a nice step down the path to financial independence right there.
Yeah, I have taken out debt. I think I have like $3,000 in debt to my parents right now. But, you know, it's stuff I can pay back with a couple of animals. That's so it's not that hard. And it's definitely not $20,000, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so the first goal that I lay out here, this has been something that I've always wanted to do since I first got into yaks, was have the first commercial yak dairy in the United States and in the West, I guess, because nobody else does it commercially, and there are reasons for that, but I've thought that I can do this, and my goal has been the next 2 years. And so, there's a lot of this stuff is business, and then there's some other things which have to do with activism, right? I want to be on the Liberty Radio Network with a live show in the next 2 years. I met my short-term goal, which was get my podcast on the Liberty Radio Network, and I did that just last month, I think, and that was awesome. So I made some steps to do that, but that's something I would like to do someday.
Mm-hmm.
And then having some side hustles going in the next 2 years, I don't think that my once a week restaurant's going to happen, especially in the next 2 years. That's something that I'm interesting. I like cooking, and I like to. It's one of the ideas behind it is it's a way to market my own produce that I'm making on the farm, because the goal would be to be cooking only stuff from. At least that maybe, you know, if not my farm, but just the community. And I think that's something that is important to me for more than one reason.
Sure.
And then the selling of meat, the main goal I have with the yaks has been the dairy, but I also want to sell the meat from all the animals that I have. And then having produce being sold on the farm, that's something I want to do. And then selling the fiber from the yaks, which so far I haven't done anything. I haven't even sold meat. So I'm about to do that. Hopefully the inspector's going to come soon. I'll be able to do that.
Right.
But, these are things I think I'm still on track to do, except for the restaurant. I'm skeptical of how soon I'll be able to do that. I think it's proven to be much more work. Yeah. I don't know. Have you ever been interested in starting a restaurant?
Not any more than anybody is, you know, after they have like a bad dining experience and they say, this is how I would do it. I probably said that. I might've even had a couple fanciful restaurant ideas in the past, but I've never put any serious thought. I would say at this point, you've probably put more thought into it than I have.
Okay. Well, I think most people do kind of have that idea. Like, yeah. Oh, would it be so cool to have a little bakery?
Yes.
You know, yeah. That's something that'd be fun, but there's a lot of work it goes into and you don't make a lot of money. But I actually came up with a decent plan to do it. I don't know where that is right now. I found that there's a lot of licensing you need to do. So I put that on the back burner. But I do think that it's possible to make around $200 a week if you do a once a week sort of thing, if you market it right.
Yeah, sure.
That's been my research. Anyway, I'm putting that on hold. I'm going to write on hold next to it. Yeah, the rest of it's starting to go in. And then I'm wondering, I don't talk about this with libertarians, especially because most of the libertarians I know are all anarchists and hate the LPO or the LP.
Libertarian Party.
Yeah.
For those so this has who actually hate been it so much they don't even know what it is. Yeah.
Right. So this is actually something I do. I actively work with the Libertarian Party of Oregon. It's very complicated on what's going on with the LP here in Oregon. It's pretty messy. There was a schism and it's just terrible. And this is why politics sucks. But it seems that the people I've been working with are the ones that seem to be coming up on top. And they're the people that I agree with in the schism. So I'm actively working with them. I actually serve on the state judicial board, judicial committee. So I hold an office. I don't think it really means much. There's never been an occasion and I'll be up. We'll be going back over this stuff next year sometime in the spring. So I haven't done anything since the last meeting. So I guess to explain my reasoning behind it, I think that community is a very important thing. And right now, the way that communities are organized are through counties and then up in these little municipalities.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I think it's important to know what's going on in your county. I think that there's actually some potential to be able to make decisions on a community level. I think federal politics is ridiculous. I don't know why anybody would be involved in it if they're truly wanting to make some sort of positive difference against this two-party system.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to work, but I do think that libertarians do have some sway on the, even the state level, because I think I've seen it happen. They can sway elections if they really try. You know, if libertarians push gun rights, they can often make the Democrats win because they'll take votes from the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And if they push marijuana, then they'll take votes from the Democrats and the Republicans will win. Which is, you know, a little game plays, which I think is ridiculous and I don't care. But I do think that it shows that the Libertarian Party can make a small difference.
Okay, yeah. So I guess there's an effect-based argument there that is if it grows to a point where it can swing an election one way or the other because the political process is going to go on regardless of how much we hate it, oppose it, ignore it, etc., at least having some people would say, and you know, I would, it's just not for me. I can't get involved in this in any way, but that having the voice that people have to pay attention to is another Ron Paul kind of wedge into having more people hear these ideas. So like, yeah, I understand that. I mean, I would just say for you, I'm not going to discourage you from doing it. I would just say maybe there's some valuable learning experiences there. Maybe seeing some of these things firsthand is a moving experience for you. Maybe mm-hmm. you make some good connections. You know, maybe you get some great ideas that aren't related to politics at all through this process. So if you have that plus, you know, I would say probably in the short term, a more constructive outlet to work within the philosophy of liberty, which would be, you know, having a live show on the Liberty Radio Network, which you already mentioned is one of your goals. You know, those two things could work nicely together. You might find that eventually you might find, I'm just saying, that having that show and having that voice satisfies all of those needs and you can say goodbye to the Libertarian
yeah, sure.
Party. But I understand what you're saying, and I certainly understand what you're saying about, you know, things on a local level, making connections with people who are actually around you towards some kind of goal. So, yeah, sure.
Okay. And then a big thing is knowing how to run a household. This was a big thing that my dad was pushing. He says, you got to know how to do that if you're going to live on your own. Yeah, that makes sense. And so I thought that I need to learn how to pay bills. I need to know how to do some basic repairing and maintenance on a house. I need to know how to keep a house sanitary and then make life comfortable for everybody else in the house.
Yeah.
This was a big thing that my parents are like, you're going to be home all day. So you're probably going to be making a majority of the mess. So you need to be able to make sure that when we come home from a stressful day at school or work that, you know, we're not going to be like, Nick, you need to clean up your crap in the living room.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense to me. I found that when you have a lot of free time, it seems like cleaning is a nice thing to do.
It is.
So I do that.
Well, I'll say this too. Having a clean space just makes you feel better. You know, it puts you in a better state of mind. I really, really like to keep things neat and clean. I find that the way you live, the surroundings in which you live, affect how you feel very much. And, you know, I would never let a person come into my home if it was untidy, because I think even on a subconscious level, that communicates a lot to them about you. So, yeah, I think that cleanliness, just as a cleaning as an exercise, as part of a routine, is super important. I like my desk to have nothing on it, you know, even though if you look at somebody like Steve Jobs' desk, piles of crap everywhere, and it didn't make any sense. And a lot of minds like that are like that. But for me, a clean space is best. Yeah,
that's what I found. But I am the one who has a lot of clutter on my desk because I'm sitting here. The last time I set up my laptop to do a show, I actually knocked over a bottle and broke glass all over my floor. And that was very upsetting. And that was because I was not tidy enough.
Sure. Yeah. And now the other thing too is like having systems in place, right? So we talked on my show in the past about the getting things done method, that mm-hmm. as a project expands and you get really, really immersed in a specific piece of work, yeah, a bunch of papers can spread out. across a desk. You can get all of these tabs open in an internet browser. You could have little post-it notes everywhere. You could have three or four Audacity projects open, one or two video projects. You're downloading YouTube stuff, and it's just kind of chaos. But the chaos is part of the creative process. But having a way to say, okay, I'm identifying this thing. It is part of this goal. It goes in this place, is a way to basically do maintenance on any project while it goes on, to keep things organized, especially in my case, to prevent myself from getting overwhelmed by clutter, whether it's physical or digital. So that's really important.
And that's what I try to do, especially online. My documents online are all very organized. I know where everything is because this is a lot of the work that I do. And I'm starting to be able to do that better with my material stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so and then moving on, I think it's most important on this plan is my responsibilities for stuff, and this is where it comes down to everyday sort of stuff. So for my daily responsibilities, I have to make a chore list for farm chores and house chores. I have not actually done this as much. I think this was the intention behind this is that this was going to apply to everybody in the household, that I was going to be, kind of dictating what people were doing. But yeah, the thought was, I'm going to be home all the time. It's not necessarily fair for me to always be taking care of the house as well. You know, people are home on the weekends, and people when they get home, they do have a share in this household, so they should be doing some of the work. So I think we decided that it would be fair for me to kind of designate some responsibilities to other people. Like I have the majority of the animals on the farm. I've got 10 yaks and 17 pigs. So, and then my sister has a bunch of goats. So it's not fair for me to be taking care of the goats. And so that was kind of the idea behind that as well.
Gotcha. It's kind of like having like daily and weekly lists as a way to check in with yourself, especially if it is tasks are in support of projects and projects are in support of the achievement of goals, right? So being able to plan like this planning can never be completely predictable, but parts of planning can be fairly predictable day to day or week to week. So having all of this stuff outlined, I think, is definitely a big advantage.
Yes, and that's why I have the Keep Up My Planner. So I'm differentiating between the chore list and my planner. I keep all of my to-do list on a day. I have it written down on the daily planner. I have my A and B priorities. So I list out everything I want to do today. You know, I prioritize it, and then I do it in order of prioritization, or if it's something really easy, I do that.
Yeah.
Right. So, and that's part of it. That's definitely part of my daily responsibilities that I'm keeping to myself.
And I think you'll find, too, when we're moving between, like, responsibilities and chores or tasks and how they support goals, watching how those things change, it communicates a lot of lessons about the achievement of goals. So if I can just tangent really quickly, you were telling me you're waiting for what is the inspector that you're waiting?
The OSDA health inspector.
OSDA, so Oregon State Department of Agriculture. Okay, yeah. So yeah, you're kind of on his schedule, right?
Yeah,
and that's right. That's a task towards a goal, right? Mm-hmm. So this recognition that, yeah, goals are about moving in the same direction, but the road we're taking and the speed we're traveling are things where we might have to have some flexibility, you know, especially when you're dealing with the state. Good heavens. But I just remember my story was, I think it was like 2005 or 2006 when I was having all these ideas about, you know, my experiences in school and what real education was. I said, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a documentary film and it's going to be huge. You know, I probably talked to like Donald Trump about my diet. It was going to be terrific and everyone's going to love it and it'll win awards. And that's how I'll get this message out there. And when I started like going through the process of trying to do that very slowly, I started to ask myself questions like, well, what am I going to do after that? You know, then I'm just the documentary filmmaker who has one great idea and then has to search for the rest of his career thinking for other things to make documentaries about, and seeing all the obstacles and seeing all the places that it was going to get slowed down and seeing the knowledge deficits that I had to do that. But I knew the needs that I was trying to meet through trying to go through that process. So the direction continued to be the same, but the roads had to change. The speed had to change. And the outcome had to change a little bit, as long as it still met the same emotional needs that I was trying to satisfy. So that kind of explains why I do what I do now. So all of this stuff is fairly flexible, but I think as long as like the direction stays the same, you know, like you want to be an entrepreneur, you want to be independent in a lot of ways that most people are not. You want to have a professional life that is different from a majority of others. So those are directions that will probably continue to stay the same.
Right, right. So, and then these two are kind of the main things that focus on education in the plan is my reading of 1 hour and then listening to two podcasts a day.
Yeah.
So I roughly read about 1 hour a day. Sometimes I don't. I guess I didn't read. I think I read yesterday, but I did not read Monday. And I don't usually read on the weekends. I consider those kind of my break days, like everybody else's. But I read if I want to. So it's hard for me to read. I hate reading. I get distracted super easily. I find that it just gets boring to me, depending on what it is. I just don't like it. I don't like to read articles either. I like to be able to do other stuff while I'm, you know, soaking in information. So I'll listen up to 4 podcasts a day and sometimes more. That's most of the time. I listen to more than 2 podcasts a day because it's easy.
Yeah.
But I at the same time, I think that reading is super important. So I have that in there.
Yeah. Reading is definitely a different kind of learning exercise. So when there is something really, really important that I really want to capture and put to use as soon as possible and as effectively as possible, the approach is get the audiobook, get a hard copy of the book. So this is how I did Getting Things Done. This is how I felt like I got a very, very good command of that subject in a very, very short amount of time. Reading a book, one of the challenges is like the only thing you have to do while you're reading is basically highlight what you're reading, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wanted to take notes too, but taking notes, which is a better way of capturing information into the memory, right? Taking what you're reading and turning it into your own words, that's different than just highlighting. A monkey could highlight a book. So to do that, though, you have to stop reading, which is adding to the process. But once you kind of get some familiarity with the structure of a book, especially if it's a how-to book like Getting Things Done, you can realize that some parts are really, really important where you really need to pay attention, and other parts are more anecdotal, like he's going to reinforce the lesson with personal experience. So that would be a good time to scratch down some notes in addition to circling or highlighting things in the book. So having somebody read their book to you makes it a more interactive process and lets you get more out of it in less time. So the thing that I do usually with articles, like if I just need to scan an article, I'll copy the text of the article and I'll paste it into a program like Evernote. If you don't use Evernote, you could just do a Word document. And I'll just bold all of the topic sentences. They're usually pretty easy to find in a skim. They're usually the first or last sentence in a paragraph. And that will just allow me to kind of capture the essence of what's there. I mean, really, most of the things in life, unless we have like super powerful genius brains, we're going to be capturing more essence than specific details. I've forgotten more of what I've learned than I still know. You know, at this point in my life, it's just true. And, you know, maybe that's not everybody's experience. Like, I certainly have a couple of friends who just have these steel trap minds, and I'm really impressed by that. But my mind is not like that. If there's ways I can improve that, I'm looking into that, and I'm working on it. How can I improve my memory? I even have a book sitting right at the end of the table there called Super Memory that I've been meaning to dig into. So audiobooks are great. If it's like a lighter subject that, again, you're just really looking to capture the essence of this thing, I did that book that we talked about on the show in the ACES series, The Body Keeps the Score. Mm-hmm. That was an audiobook that I read, and I took some notes while I was reading it, but really I would just listen to the author, same guy who read Renegade History of the United States, by the way, really good reader, voice personality, I guess. I would take some notes if something really powerful hit me. Sometimes I'd be listening to it at the gym. I just scratch something down in my little gym log. But I was able to capture enough of that book that way. The next one in my queue is Waking Up by Sam Harris. I'll probably just listen to that as the audiobook. Those are a couple of different approaches. You know, audiobooks would allow you, especially if you on the farm have some kind of menial, non-distracting task, like moving a bunch of things from one place to another, or cleaning up something or sorting things, like audiobooks would definitely be good for that. But podcasts work too. So
Sure. Yeah. And so what I'm finding, I just started reading the first book on my list, which is Modules for Manhood by Kenneth Royce, aka Boston Tea Party.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's an interesting guy. We were having difficulties scheduling him on. He lives out in Wyoming and he only comes to town once a week or something. So it's been difficult, but we're trying to figure it out. I want to have him on after I'm done reading his book. And I'm also going to do a show on the book as soon as I'm done. But what I found is this is a book that takes a lot of heavy notes, right? It's most of what it is quotes and just little one-liners kind of backing up his point. And I love the book. It's super great.
Mm-hmm.
But I found it's taken me a long time to read because I'm writing so many notes. And I'm wondering to myself, like, do I need to take this much? But I see this information. I think, oh, I want this. I want to have this, especially for myself, because I'm hoping to pass on this book to somebody else.
Sure.
So I'm thinking, oh, I want to keep this information. This is really great. That's what's taken me a long time to read it, because it's an interesting book and I really love it. But all the notes.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, that can definitely slow you down. And it just takes time, like especially with any new author, like getting a sense of their style and the way they organize information to really know what the optimal way is to interface with the book. I've never read anything by him, so I can't offer any advice there.
Okay, I think he's pretty good. He's very conservative is what I found.
Yeah, I've heard him talk before. I've heard him on The Fiends, I think, back in the day.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good though. I like him. And then so moving on to the more responsibilities, I have weekly responsibilities. This is something, or this first one, make a meal plan for the week. I have not done that. I probably plan one meal a week. Like I have my cookbook. We have an exchange student from Germany this year. And so she came and one of the things she bought was a German cookbook. So I was like, oh, well, I'm going to cook some of these. Like this looks really great. I'm going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And she enjoys eating her own food. Like schnitzel is awesome. Have you ever had schnitzel?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's delicious. So, and she loves having it when we cook something German. So that's what I've been doing here. And I think I do need to amp it up on this responsibility.
This is something we could do a whole show about if you wanted to.
Oh, totally.
Meal planning, meal plans? Cooking, and shopping.
Yeah. I've been listening to Rebooted Body recently. And that's been something that's been on my mind. I unfortunately really like bread. I love cake. Yeah. Man, pastries are amazing. But yeah, anyway, that's something that I think I want to work on more.
Speaking of Rebooted Body, if Kevin heard me say that to you, he'd probably say, I should probably be involved in that too, because bread on its own. Kevin helped me out. Kevin helped me out a lot back in March when I was really confused about what I was doing. And I kind of used that experience as a springboard to really focus in, pay more attention, and come up with a better system for myself. I definitely recommend his show as a resource for that. But I really think my strength would be introducing somebody to, number one, how to eat healthy at a low cost, right? If somebody was just a complete disaster, right? Like you open their pantry and there's cans of SpaghettiOs, even though SpaghettiOs are so delicious. and they're really good if you add just a little sugar and some Parmesan cheese and stir it. But that wouldn't be one of my tips in the show that we were going to do, Nick. That wouldn't even be in there. I wouldn't even mention SpaghettiOs. But if somebody was in like SpaghettiOs land as far as their relationship with food, I could help them. So depending on where you are, yeah, I mean, I would love to have that conversation. I think we could both learn and share ideas. Because you're doing a lot of things that I don't know about. I mean, you're going to be like processing your own food.
Right.
You know, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I just started recently listening to Rebooted Body. Mm-hmm. I first heard about Kevin from your show and I was thinking, oh man, some of this stuff, it kind of explains some of the issues I'm having health related. And so I was like, man, I should probably start listening to that guy. I'm listening to a show and I'm thinking, oh, this is perfect for me to plug Yaks, of course, because that's something Yaks are great with, the paleo diet.
Mm-hmm.
That's what most people market Yaks with as being compliant with that diet. And I think it's showing that it's a good diet. So I've been listening to more of a show and then I was thinking I need to contact him. So I would definitely be interested in doing that show with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
So another weekly responsibility is for me to put out a show. This was an obligation I had to get on the Liberty Radio Network's podcast feed. You had to put out a show once a week.
Yep.
And so I did that. And I've been doing that for a long time now. I think it's since January. Maybe I fell off in February. I don't know. But that's something I'm doing now. And now I have to keep it going since now I'm on the podcast feed. And it's one thing that I found interesting about this is it helps me keep track of what day it is. You know, because I don't see people anymore very often. I try to make sure I get at least one social situation in every week so that I keep up on my person skills. That's the, kind of the only thing that keeps me on my toes and knowing what the date is when I'm going to put out a show.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. What's this last one here? Write and publish a book review?
Yeah, so this is the thing that I wanted to do for every book that I read. And this will help me keep track of what I'm reading and keep me from kind of falling off the wagon on reading a book. I guess I was just arguing about this with my dad. He's like, when are you going to publish a book review? And I was like, well, I'm not done with my book. He's like, aren't you supposed to publish a review every week? I'm like, no, why would I say that? I know I can't read a book in a week. and now I see I'm supposed to do that. That is something I might have to take out.
Well, this is very flexible.
Yeah.
So what I do for stuff like this, when I say, oh, one day I got to do this. And then a week later, just the emotions that are related to that or the reality of life that I've had a chance to consider since originally formulating the idea or the goal, something's changed, right? Mm-hmm. But there's still something that's compelling and interesting about whatever the idea was. Whatever the sure. project or the goal that I hope to achieve or the need that I hope to meet. So I just move it into a folder called Someday Maybe.
Okay.
You know, I have one for like books and movies I want to watch too, which is called Media Consumption Queue, right? Because people are always telling me about books and movies and TV shows. And instead of just forgetting them all, you know, if people are telling me about them related to like people who listen to the show are telling me about them, I want to capture that somewhere. So we never have to like delete an idea just because it isn't really feasible in the now.
Yeah. So I do this especially with music. I really like listening to music, and people will suggest to me sometimes, oh, you should check out this guy. And so I write that down in my people to check out list. And when I'm tired of listening to the music I'm listening to now, I pick somebody out of that list and I think, oh, this sounds interesting. I'm going to listen to that. And then I also have that for links that people send me. And I have my book list that just never stops growing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just pulled up mine. I can tell you what's in it right now. Someday, maybe. One is just doing a listener named Sean sent me an email suggesting I do a show with this guy named Morgan on this fallacy website that he built. So that's something. And someday, maybe that could actually probably be made more realistic. Someday, maybe is usually like more far out there things. Do a series on biphasic sleep. I actually have a meeting with a guy next Tuesday about doing a series on sleep. So that one might get moved out of someday, maybe. This third one, there's this educational module website called Alakees. I interviewed the two guys who created the site back in 2009. This has a question mark. It says Alakees integration, the possibility of integrating my site with a like course-driven site like Alakees. And then the last one, create a School Sucks project ebook. That is still definitely a someday maybe. So that's what's in mind right now. Hey, I was wondering for the sake of time, if we could maybe condense what's left on your list a little bit, because I just wanted to add the comment that I really like the way that this is structured. What you've done for the people who can't see this is you basically sectioned off all of your goals, which would be, you know, producing Yak Dairy, doing the weekly podcast, the weekly restaurant, processing meat, growing and selling vegetables, and doing libertarian party activism. And you've taken this trivium approach that I like, where at first you're listing all the materials that you need, which is basically a part of the grammar, the skills that are required to work with the materials, the how, which is usually how is usually connected to rhetoric in the trivium, but this is really connected to the logic, like how you will take materials and skills and use them to produce something. And then in this case, the rhetoric is what I will learn, right? What you will get out of each activity toward the achievement of your goal. So I think this is very cool. This is a great addition. And in some cases too, it says why it's important to you, which I also really, really like. I think that's definitely valuable when it comes to goals.
Yeah. And I think that sums up the that whole section right there. I don't think we need to get into the details of that.
No, because there's a ton here. Like, yeah, if we went through these line by line,
pages.
If there's anything you want to add about this section generally, I really like that you did this.
Yeah, I'm happy with the way this is that was structured. The importance to me part was suggested by Joshua Sheets.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna have him on to go over this as well. But yeah, that I didn't know this was compliant with the Trivium until you bring it up. I think it's a good way to structure that, right?
Oh yeah, wow. That's yeah. I think it really does have a lot of Trivium prints on it, just the way things are written out. And I wanted to hear actually a little bit about your plan B.
Yes,
this is fun.
Yeah, because I was really upset when my dad said, you got to make a plan B. I'm like, whatever. I'm going to do what I want. If I fail at this, then I don't care what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. Like, that was my thought. I was like, well, I'm going to die. I'm not going to make it if I don't do this. This is what I'm going to do. And this is what I want to do. I don't care about anything else. If I need to figure it out, I'll do it then. So, right. Yeah. So I was being kind of facetious when I said none, these or death. That was a direct quote.
Well, I know your dad doesn't look at life this way, just from what I know about him. But I think this is like plan B is basically like, what do you do if the one road you travel down in life called go to high school, go to college, get a job, have career, retire, doesn't work out? Then what's plan B? Usually, I guess it comes in when you get to the career part, right? But by having a vision and basically a mission for yourself in your own life, this can diverge in several different directions at any given time, as long as you keep moving forward. Like, you don't need a plan A and a plan B. You can have a plan, and in that plan is possible path A, possible path B, possible path C, possible path D, as long as, you know, it gets you to the end that you want. So it doesn't mean like you have to throw out if something goes wrong, especially with like the, you know, the Oregon Department of Agriculture, everything, that the entire first 5 or 6 pages of what you sent me has to be torn up and thrown away. It just means you have to find another way forward in that respect. If the vision at the end continues to be compelling for you, I guess some people would have the experience in life where their original vision, if they ever even had one, is no longer interesting or compelling or motivating. And yeah, then it would be time for a new plan. But the whole plan A or plan B thinking, I think your dad was probably just doing it more from a point of view of like, look, I don't want you to get frustrated and, you know, wind up doing nothing because you're all demoralized by not experiencing success. I mean, what you've laid out here, there's 150 opportunities for failure, Nick. And in many of those areas, there probably will be failure. And mm-hmm. it can be temporary, it can be permanent, it can be devastating, it can be a learning experience. But yeah, I mean, I would just say as long as you know generally where you want to go, keep going in that direction and take the lessons of failure and use them as you go forward.
Sure. And I added on to this plan B already was the majority of this plan. This is all of the business ideas I have, and I have more too. Milking the yaks is the main thing I want to do. And then selling meat is also another thing. So I've tried to diversify what I'm doing in order that if something does fail, I have more opportunities. That's mm-hmm. been kind of my idea in going into this, especially with animals, is it's first of all, I know I shouldn't be like, you should always have a little bit of skepticism. You should always have some negative visualization and how things are going to turn out. But food industry is not going anywhere. If anything, it's moving towards organic, right? But it's not losing importance, right? People need food. They always will. So there's definitely some sound market. The thing is, I'm going into a very niche market, and are yaks a fad? And it may prove to be. And so I have other things I can do with that, right? I can drop yaks, pick up, you know, taurine cattle, and I have pigs, so I can do that, right?
Yeah.
So it is something to think about, right? And I do. It's like, is yak meat that great over grass-fed cattle? And it does have some benefits, but is it going to be a fad like buffalo was? And I'm definitely okay with it being that. That's something that I do think about. And I think that it is important to think about, what am I going to do if this doesn't work out? And I do think that I have enough ideas to back that up.
it might have been the first question I ever asked you on when you called into Free Talk Live that time. I said something like, you're smart, so you've probably considered the possibility that in a few years you might not be interested in this anymore.
Yeah, you did ask that.
Yeah. So it seems like you put a lot of thought into that.
Sure. You know? And that's one thing I've done with the show, right? This is something that I enjoy doing. I like making this. And I've seen people who have monetized their show like yours. So I'm thinking, well, I don't want to do that right now. But if I need to, I definitely think I have the resources to pursue that, right? Mm-hmm. So there are other ideas. And then, you know, I have other skills, right? So I can get into that if I need to.
Yeah, absolutely. And you also have a list here of books and podcasts.
Yeah, this is not my book list. This is just a few of the books I threw on there because my book list goes on for pages.
I'm glad to see School Sucks on your podcast list. A lot of good shows here.
It's the top, yeah. And I have to add some more on there too. I recently downloaded one of, isn't it Tragedy and Hopes? What's this guy's name, Wes Bertrand?
Tragedy and Hope is Richard Grove.
Richard Grove, that's right. Okay, so I downloaded one of his like 3-hour long shows.
Peace Revolution?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So three hours, you're starting with the shorter ones.
Yeah, right.
That's an amazing educational experience, the Peace Revolution podcast. You know, it's a great commitment to a subject when you look at the way that Rich puts those shows together. And he's an amazing historical researcher, and he's a really good guide through a lot of those topics.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that.
Awesome.
Well, that's all I wanted from you today. Do you have anything else you want to say?
Well, I hope that you will update me as this develops, because I guess this is the time for you where the rubber starts to hit the road. It is the beginning of the school year, so this, I guess, is the time where the people who are, you know, most invested in your future besides you, like mom and dad and grandpa, are going to be looking at what you're doing with maybe a little bit more scrutiny. And I think that's understandable because, you know, it's new. And I appreciate you, you know, reaching out to me for feedback. I hope this has been helpful, and I hope I can continue to be helpful in the future. I guess it was like almost 2 years ago that we first encountered each other. We've had a lot of great conversations since then. I've definitely, you know, seen a lot of forward movement. And that's really inspiring, and it's really exciting. So good for you. I'm excited we had this conversation. This is awesome.
Yeah, me too. You're somebody I respect. I've been listening to School Sucks for quite a long time, and it's definitely probably been one of the most, if not the most, influential things in my life for quite a long time. So I really appreciate you coming on.
That's awesome. This is why this show exists, Nick.
Yeah.
For people like you. That was my vision originally. That's had to change a little bit, right? I've had to go down a few different paths since then. But you were definitely the kind of mind that I was picturing at the beginning of the show. So I'm definitely glad you're out there. And anytime in the future we can do something like this, it would be my pleasure.
Yeah, totally.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please help us out by leaving a positive review on iTunes. If you were angered by the show, please help us out by leaving negative reviews everywhere. If you think this is an important message for students, for parents, or for the future of intellectual freedom, please consider supporting us at schoolsucksproject.com/AV. For $6 a month, you'll get access to hundreds of additional hours of content while helping us grow and spread this message further.